2009, 2010, by this time. terms of our mandate, constitutionally, we divided from the section 202 of the Constitution, as well as the and that particular section presents the primary objective of the defense force to defend and protect the public in the return of the defense of the people in accordance with the Constitution and the principles of international law and the regulation in the use of force. In terms of the question, we have the specific on the specific one those entities which report to the Secretary for Defense, and then on the right, those entities which report to the Chief of the National Defense Force, and then those entities whose functions are shared between the two entities of the Secretary for Defense and the Chief of the National Defense Force. In terms of the Secretary for Defense, you can go one slide up and go back to this. In terms of the Secretary for Defense, the Secretary for Defense then is then covered as the head of department in accordance with the Public Service Act, as promulgated. Also has the duty role as the accounting officer, also as covered in the Public Service Act and in the Public Finance Management Act. And then as a defense policy advisor, a principal defense policy advisor to the Minister of Defense, and then furthermore, as enhancing civil control over the armed forces, and then also having the responsibility to issue comprehensive instructions to the Chief of the National Defense Force, and then therefore the South African National Defense Force, and then also monitoring compliance, and then of course managing employees of the Secretariat for Defense. The Chief of the National Defense Force, on the other hand, is the principal military advisor to the Minister of Defense. The Chief of the Defense Force is also responsible for developing and promulgating military policy and doctrine, also responsible to issue commands or order directives into the National Defense Force. And then fourthly, to direct, manage and administer the South African National Defense Force in accordance with the law and the regulations of government, and then also execute the South African National Defense Force programs per budget, and then of course provide information to the Secretary for Defense as and when it is requested, also in the context of the regular reports and the comprehensive instructions as provided. And then employment of the South African National Defense Force, that is employment in operations, whether internally or externally, and also that within the context of the political direction as issued and the comprehensive instruction in that regard. And then ETD, that is education, training and development to effect compliance to the regulations and the law. And then to also develop a military response capability of the National Defense Force. The chief of the National Defense Force also has a responsibility for contingency planning of the National Defense Force, which is the overall national contingency planning of government. And then last but one, to ensure the military discipline of the National Defense Force, and then to institute a culture of the National Defense Force in accordance with the law. Culture in that sense, the military culture, also the human rights and all of that. So those are basically the functions of that. Now go back to the organizational structure. Now, having indicated what the responsibility of the Secretary for Defense and the Defense Secretariat as well as the Chief of the National Defense Force are, the entities that therefore report to the Secretary for Defense as the head of department are, as indicated, firstly, the Defense Policy, Strategy and Planning Division, whose head is here, Dr. Kamete, that entity. And then the Financial Management Division, which is headed by the Chief Finance Officer, Ms. Mutwane. She's represented by Mr. Emil Garcia. And then the Defense Material Division, which is headed by Mr. Antoine Fesser, here to my right. And then Defense International Affairs Division, which is headed by the current speaker, who holds the dual post of Defense International Affairs Head and also acting in the position of the Secretary for Defense. And then the Internal Audit Division, that is an entity that has not yet been filled, but the process to fill that particular establishment is currently underway and has been advertised already. And then the Defense Enterprise Information Systems Management Division, that is primarily what across government is commonly called the GITO, that is the Government Information Technology Officer. That entity also reports to the Secretary for Defense. So, all in all, those are the entities that report directly to the Secretary for Defense. Now, coming to the South African National Defense Force and the Chief of the National Defense Force, the entities that report to the Chief of the National Defense Force, I'll start with the extreme left, the Joint Operations Division. That is the division which reports to the Chief of the National Defense Force, and it's the entity which the Chief of the National Defense Force uses to employ the National Defense Force. And it's headed by Lieutenant General T.G. Matanzima. And then the second one, the South African Army, which is headed by Lieutenant General Shoke. And then the third, the South African Air Force, which is headed by Lieutenant General Carlo Gagliano. And then the fourth, the South African Navy, which is headed by Vice Admiral Modimo. And then the South African Military Health Services, that's headed by Lieutenant General D.J. Ramlakhan. And then the Defense Intelligence Division, that is currently headed by Major General Shilubani, in an acting position following the departure or retirement of Lieutenant General Mutau. And then the Corporate Staff Division, which is headed by Lieutenant General Rinus van Rensburg. Now, under the Corporate Staff Division, there are those small subdivisions, which is the Military Policy, Strategy and Planning, which is headed by Major General Sindani, and then the Defense Reserves, headed by Major General Roy Anderson, and then the Chaplain General, headed by Brigadier General Cornelison. Now, in addition to those establishments, there are also other establishments that have a dual reporting line. Before I come to those three, let me go to those ones that are indicated as length of staff. Firstly, the Human Resources Division, that is headed by Lieutenant General Derek Mugwebi, and reports to the Secretary for Defense in his capacity or her capacity as the person responsible for the human resource of the department as the Department of State, and in accordance with the Public Service Act and all the human resource legislation as well as regulatory framework, but also has a reporting line to the Chief of the National Defense Force as the head of the personnel of the Defense Force. And then the second link, the Defense Legal Services Division, that has a dual reporting line. The Chief of Defense Legal Services is a civilian who reports to the Secretary for Defense. But within the Defense Legal Services Division, you also have the Office of the Adjutant General. That is the entity which is primarily responsible for the military justice system, for the execution of the military justice system. So that system is located within that division. And the Adjutant General has a reporting line to the Chief of the National Defense Force to assist him in the execution of the military justice system. And then the Defense Inspectorate Division, that is the Inspector General of the Department of Defense. I didn't mention the name. Defense Legal Services Division is headed by Ms. Liz Kubushi, Mamluko Kubushi. And then the Adjutant General is the Major General Mono. With respect to the Inspectorate Division, that is headed by Major General Mkonisi Betani. Now, within that establishment, you also have the Internal Audit Directorate. With the establishment of the Internal Audit Division in the Secretariat, that Directorate Internal Audit is going to move and be part of that. So for now, the Inspector General has that dual reporting line because that entity is still there. But for all intents and purposes, it's the Inspector General of the Defense Force. And then the Defense Foreign Relations Division, that's a subdivision, which for now provides services to both the Secretary for Defense and the Chief of the National Defense Force. And the Defense Foreign Relations primarily has to do with the execution of defense international affairs, and therefore the military attaches or defense advisors would then be reporting to that. And then the other structures, those three at the bottom there, the Logistics Division, they have a reporting line to the Chief of the National Defense Force. The Logistics Division is headed by Major General Mkonyani. And then there's the Military Police. The MPs, the Military Police, are headed by Brigadier General Lidwaba. He's actually in the process of moving, and somebody else is being appointed into that post. He's got another posting as we speak. And then the Command and Management Information Systems Division, that is your division that has to do with signals and telecommunications equipment. Now, in terms of the, having seen the mandate and the organizational structure as illustrated, I don't know why you have legislation here. I thought you'd have it later, because in terms of the scope, it's the government planning cycle. Or should we both, we can go to it? Okay. All right. Yeah. In terms of the scope, the third aspect of the scope that we cover is that which relates to the national planning framework. And the national planning framework, and the background to it is as indicated there, which is that during 2001 there was approval, and the honorable members, that is on slide number 14, in the documentation. In 2001, cabinet approved the national planning framework so as to ensure that there is integrated planning and more efficient implementation. And therefore, defines the cycles in terms of starting with the policy, strategizing, and then monitoring and evaluation, budgeting, public announcement of programs, and the development of programs. Now, all of that constitutes what is the national planning framework. And it is therefore, by no mistake, that with this current administration, there was a move to elevate the whole planning function, national planning function, and to establish a ministry which would then have that responsibility to ensure the coordination of planning across government and to then have that planning, national planning commission. Next slide. Now, in terms of the government planning cycle, the framework of the planning cycle is as indicated. There is a very busy slide, but if I may start, you'll see the legend there. The purple is the local at the local government level. The red is with respect to provincial, and the green with respect to national. But with the intention that there is the harmonization of all of those three tiers or three spheres of government. Now, I'll start with the one on the extreme top, extreme left, which is the yearly report to the presidency. The period for that is during November. And then in the December period, then you have the preparation of the program of action. And then that is followed closely by the program of action and the broad medium-term strategic framework, that is the MTSF ideas. And within that very period, they didn't include it. You also have the cabinet, the Khotla extended cabinet, which brings in all of cabinet, the premier, as well as the director generals across national and provincial government. And of course, the local authority being represented by the head of SALCA. And that sets the framework for what becomes then the State of the Nation address or the State of the Province address during February with the opening of Parliament. So before you have the State of the Nation address or the State of the Province address, you have then had the program of action as well as the broad medium-term strategy framework ideas. The State of the Nation address is then followed by the budget speech, and thereafter the budget debates of the different ministries and different departments. And that happens also during February month. And then after that, you then have, in March, you'll see that there is nothing that is indicated there. And the substantive reason for that is based on the fact that during March, it is the last month of the financial year, and therefore it's the period which ministries and departments have to then use to prepare the financial statements, ensure that expenditure, as far as possible, is up to 100%, and so on. So that come the 31st of March, the books for the financial year have been completed and closed and handed over to the Auditor General, who will then audit the financial statement, and then to begin the process of preparing the annual report of the financial year just passed. So, for local government, they would then look at the budget finalization during April. Similarly, also the commencement with the IDP, Integrated Development Planning, during the month of April. And then in May, to begin to have the release of the draft of the medium-term strategic framework and to have it finalized by July. Speaking of the medium-term strategic framework, it has been dealt with and has now been released for public consumption, because it has gone through several iterations. And then, of course, during the June period, the program of action and the budget at the local government level, and then the July, which we've just passed, the MTSF has been adopted, as indicated. and then during August, is that preparations for the medium-term expenditure committee hearings, and you then have the actual MTEC hearings during September. Now, with the MTEC hearings, that is a period for whatever budget adjustments that the departments or ministries would want to table forward, as well as looking at what priorities, policy priorities they would like to present, or changes in plans or priorities also during that period of September. You also have during that same September period, although not reflected, the ministerial committee of the budget during that period. And then in October, through the Minister of Finance, the release of the medium-term budget policy statement. And the budget policy statement basically then looks at whatever adjustments that will have been made since the budget speech that was done in February. So in October, then you have that medium-term budget policy statement. And then, of course, in November, the beginning of local government planning, and then that basically then completes the cycle in terms of the framework of the planning cycle. Now, on the speaking still to the matter of the cycle, what is our own planning and reporting cycle then? If we read it against what we then have as the government planning cycle. Firstly, of course, you have in red the oversight by yourselves, by Parliament, provincial legislature, or the municipal council. Now, starting with the extreme left, that is the electoral mandate, as well as the process of releasing of the scenarios in 2025. There is, in fact, a process underway to further enhance the scenarios, that is the planning scenarios for the forthcoming period, over a 30-year period or over a 25-year period. Yeah. And then the medium-term strategy framework. Now, all of those then inform that the state of the nation. And then and it is during this period that from the ministerial or departmental process, we then also make input into those processes of the state of the nation, and then policy development, new or revised policies and priorities. And then during that time, although we didn't put months there, we then used that opportunity to do an environmental analysis and also an opportunity that the Minister of Defense, Department of Defense, the Defense Secretariat, as well as the SANDF, goes on their strategic workshops before you have a cycle again that will take in everybody. And that period is basically your strategic planning period, where you also, after those workshops, you have the five-year strategic plan. That is then followed, once the strategic plan is in place, is then followed by operational planning and budgeting. And operational planning and budgeting is then encapsulated in the planning and budgeting seminar, which also looks at annual performance plans and budgets, and that is around the time that when you look at the national framework, you are having the medium-term expenditure committee, you're also having the medium-term budget policy statement during that period. And then implementation and in-year reporting, that is implementing monthly financial reports, quarterly performance reports, as well as, of course, within the quarterly performance reports, the appearances before Parliament, and then annual reports to have tabled within 3 months of the end of the financial year to table to Parliament, and then that is the end of the report. And then you begin the cycle again, the five-year end-of-term performance review. So that is what it is. And they are the months, if we could go through them. Can you go through them, Andy?
Thank you. already been indicated by the chief, we have the national planning framework, which we align all the time with, which then you have your, in fact, it's what has been indicated. I don't want to get there. Let me get to the DOT planning framework. In terms of the DOT planning framework, we have your annual report, which then gets tabled to PCD and in Parliament. You also have quarterly reports. You also have the strategic plan, which gets evaluated through the DBBAC processes. And you also have then the strategic planning session, which are dealt with in the following manner. You will have a DOD work session, which is an interpretation of the state of the nation address as gleaned from the DOD's responsibility by the minister. Then that work session, which gives substance on what must be done within the DOD, is then followed by the minister's work session, followed by the DOD work session, which gives substance to what the minister wants. After that, the two entities that are within defense, that being the Defense Secretariat and the SNDF, they then interpret the guidelines as issued by the DOD at the DOD work session by the accounting officer in line with the MOD guidelines and interpret them in terms of the Defense Secretariat and the SANDF. That interpretation then will lead to what it is concretely that's going to happen. And that which is concrete then is actually dealt with at the planning seminar to say this is the interpretation of the guidelines. And that seminar then presents a basis for the development of level 2 plans. This session takes place in October, and as a consequence of the information from this session, Level 2 plans are developed from October till March. In April, they submit their Level 2 plans, and they go through what is called the Departmental Program Budget Evaluation Committee. The plans submitted by the various services are then evaluated technically to check if they comply with the requirements of the DOD and the government trajectory. The DPBAC happens, like I said, in April, the technical one. What then happens is we then have the rigorous evaluation of the plans against the budget, and that happens now in May, June. Those plans get evaluated and they are sent back for review. And the plans that are evaluated now will be submitted to the department in April. They get submitted again to the department around October, November. And it is these plans that inform the development of the strategic plan. May I say then that at this point you also have the in-year, which is evaluated in August, looking at spending against plan. It is during that period that then we have the changes to plan, which get taken to the National Treasury as part of the budgeting processes. The other thing that is important to indicate is that we then also have an interpretation of what we will be doing in terms of strategy, what we have done, what successes we've made, what proposals we have in terms of going forward, and the funding that goes with it. And that is provided for in the EME. And the estimate of national expenditure informs them what will appear in this threat plan that is evaluated in June. Whilst the ENE is also informed by the performance against plan that is done around August to make sure then that any changes to plan are approved and documented and sent to the National Treasury. With regards to the plan now being implemented, you will have a first quarterly report, a second quarterly report, a third quarterly report. It was agreed then at the PCD during the previous year that the quarterly report is not in existence, because during that period, it is already the period that we must begin working on the annual report. And as such, the quarterly report is not there. In place of it, you have the annual report. Yes, the fourth quarterly report is not there. In place of it, because the time frame is during the time when we are beginning the annual report, in place of that, you have the annual report, which is being developed. And the annual report, as we know, it then gets tabled. The processes of developing the annual report are such that, as required by law, we then send the draft to the AG and the National Treasury, and the AG then will do its external verification. And what then happens is that this document is presented to the PCP and then tabled no later than the 30th of September each year to Parliament. I'm not sure if there's anything.
Versus what it tells us to spend. And remember that the second document that may be approved on this level and then the one. Then, as Mr. Lubach indicated, during that year, you find the work with and then with this financial you find the annual report. So the annual report is another document which links a specific time schedule and then makes a report. How have you executed the strategic business plan? And what are the deviations and what are the reasons? And from a little bit of experience, thank you very much for the opportunity. I think it's very important for a portfolio committee to make a decision in the time curve, where is the time aligned, because what is it finding the path? Sometimes by the time we get to the portfolio committee, they couldn't actually do something with the strategic business plan because they actually part of their time frame already. As a result of the process. Or the thing is that you must take notice of the annual report, because the annual report, before the government, was actually looking to, is that you will find there was also a year zero, and there was also a year zero. That means, let's keep in mind, say, 2006 is another one here. For 2006, there's a year zero, that's a 2007. And that's going to take 2008. So, the other thing that's very important is that at any time frame, when you are in the calendar year, you are actually involved in three cycles. You are going to be spending money. There's another cycle that's going to be next year that you're going to plan with, and then one that you're going to be actually involved. And that's the other challenge you have in the department, because you are dealing in one calendar year actually with the work, the planning and execution. Of these cycles of work. And often you find people getting confused with this because they refer to the strategic business plan of this year while they actually do that one. So that's also something that does. Thank you very much, Chair, for allowing me to do this one.
Yeah, now, just a quick re-emphasis. The strategic business plan is for looking into the future for the next 3 years. Year one, let's take the one we just tabled. Year one, which is 2009, 1st of April 2009, right until count 3 years. That is 2011, March 2011. That is the span of the strategic business plan in the context of the medium-term expenditure framework. And then the annual report would then, in the strategy, cover year one. Of the strategic business, so only the 1 year in the strategic business plan, and is therefore looking backward in terms of what had been tabled to say these are our plans, this is what we want to do. To say, did we do it? Did we spend the money that we said we would spend, and did we spend it triple E, effectively, efficiently, economically, and all of that, and no fruit level we fully spend it. So that is the context. But can you go on to the other one, if we're done with this one? Yeah. You want to speak to this busy one? Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just saying that if members who feel that there's an issue that is not really clear, raise your hand and give you an opportunity to get more clarity. Mm-hmm. It can make you to understand. Or this is really to prepare you to understand, given the program of action you take it, that this is how this department is operating. We need to be able to explain this from them. It's okay, my mind.
Thank you, Shane. Here now we are having in this slide the accountability documents. And the accountability documents are clustered in terms of planning and budgeting and in-year report and reporting, let me put it that way. In terms of planning and budgeting, you have strategic plan. And as required now in the draft framework from National Treasury, there's an expectation of a 5-year plan, which is then accompanied by annual performance plan. And the annual performance plan then, as the name indicates, it provides what is going to be done during that year, and as Mr. Fessler has indicated, what will then be reflected in the performance agreement. Then you have, in terms of reporting, Before I leave plans, I need to say that the strategic plan is supposed to be a document that will steer in the 5-year horizon. But the annual performance plan is the one then that can change and rise to any circumstances. But obviously, there's an interface between the two. If the changes are such that then they are major, then they will impact on the strategic plan, then which means then that the strategic plan will be amended as such, and that will be done through the appropriate approval. Going to reporting, I need to say this, that the reporting that we have there relates to both plans and budgeting. You will remember that in terms of budgeting, there are monthly financial reports that are submitted, that is in terms of the law. Then with regards to performance against plan, we have quarterly performance reports. And the quarterly performance is in line with Regulation 5.3.1, where the accounting officer has to report on the achievements and indicate and look at how to deal with challenges that are being experienced. The quarterly report has said and talks to two things. It talks to non-financial performance information and also to performance information. And the quarterly report is submitted as required by law to the executive authority for approval and is presented as such. The next accounting report is the end of the year reporting, which is the annual report, which then is developed between the period of 1st of April till the 31st of May, because by the 31st of May it must be with the AG, who then do external verification, and it must be submitted then, it must be tabled no later than the end of September. Then we have long-term reporting, where we have then the end of the year performance review. May I just say, in terms of the end of the year reporting, as indicated in the previous slide on the government framework, we are required in terms of the program of action to provide quarterly reports and also to provide the end of the year report. And I think that is what one would, I think that's the essence of the slide that we have in front of us there. You have the strategic plan, annual performance plan, reporting, you have monthly, quarterly, and then you have the end of the year report and the end of the term year. End of the term performance review. I'm not sure whether I should go back then to the other slides that were there before that. And just to indicate, the reasoning of the flow of the document was to pull together ideas that go together in terms of what is the existence and what is the legislation. And then we move to the planning.
Members, just in terms of the accountability documents, in part of the budget process, there are two specific contributions that the department makes, and the first one is when we submit our ENE or the estimate of national expenditure, we provide specific inputs to the appropriation bill that is tabled in Parliament. In terms of the PFMA, it should be done before the 1st of April. That is to approve the budgets for government as a whole. And then during October, the departments also submit their inputs to the Adjustments Appropriation Bill that is tabled in Parliament during November normally, and that addresses specific in-year changes to the budget baselines of national departments, provincial government, and local government. So that's a instances where the where a department, the baseline of a department, the budget baseline can be adjusted to provide for new additional funds or a reduction in the budget allocation. So that's two very important accountability or inputs to accountability documents. And ultimately, when we get to the annual financial statements, we need to ensure that we do not overspend in terms of that budget baseline allocation as published in the annual adjustments appropriation bill. That's a final bill that provides the budget allocation per program for every department. Thank you. Thank you, Government Chair. Sorry for coming late. I understand some of the provisions, but others I don't. I understand what MTSF stands for, medium term report or whatever. I don't know what TOO stands for. CD, CC, perhaps AG stands for, what is this, Chairman? And so on and so forth. I suppose some good will happen. But these are provisions. Thank you.
No, you're correct. Apologies. I actually kept nodding to the colleagues and to desist from using the acronyms as they are playing. Now, saying that, I was actually nodding the colleagues here to say in full. Yeah, because it's not written out in full. So if you could quickly just go through a few of them, MTSF, POA, L1, L0, CDCC, and all of that, AG. Just the ones on this slide.
I'll go very slowly. Let me take it from here. Here, you have the minister's work session. Minister's work session, here. You have, the minister's work session. Right. The minister's work session gives substance to what came out of the budget speech and the State of the Nation Address. And the minister's work session gives direction to what must happen in the department. Following the minister's work session, you have the accounting officer convening the DOD work session. That is the Department of Defense work session to give substance to what the minister has indicated. After that, the two entities, the Defense Secretariat, established in terms of Section 204 of the Constitution, and the SANDF, established in terms of 2241 of the interim constitution, interpret the accounting officer's directive. And this interpretation lends itself then in what it is then that must inform your planning and budgeting. And the planning and budgeting actually leads to a basis for the development of level 2 plans. These plans are the ones that are technically, they are received in April. Planning and budgeting happens in October. They are received in April and they are technically evaluated in May, June. After they have been technically evaluated, the expectation is that they will be sent back to the department by the service and division for consultation in November so that the start plan process can commence. But in August, I want us to look at what is happening here. You have a quarterly report in June of the in-year. You have also the strategic, the annual report that is being finalized at that same time. You also have to prepare for what we call departmental program budgeting budgeting evaluation committee. That is what is called in other departments a mid-year review. So there are three things that are taking place during that period. Going back to the annual report, when the annual report is finished, I said the draft is sent to the AG no later than the 31st of May and the National Treasurer as required by law to the audit, to the Office of the Auditor General and the National Treasurer. This document then gets printed through our communications unit. That is what you call CDCC. And the printing then will lead to a published document, which will then be presented to the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans, and then be tabled in Parliament no later than the 30th of September. The trend has been, when we deal with the annual report, if the presentation to the PCD happens before the tabling, then we request a closed session, precisely because it is not yet made public by way of tabling. I think I need to emphasize that point. But normally, if then the tabling, if the TCD presentation happens after the tabling, as is evident this time, then we don't require a closed session. Then, coming to the program of action, my pen is making a problem for me. Coming to the program of action, which is okay. How do I do this one? Okay. The program of action, which is an interpretation then of the state of nation address to say this is how then we're moving going forward. The program of action, like I said, is reported on by all organs of state through quarterly reports and also through what they call the end of year report. There are quarterly reports for the program of action. There are quarterly reports in terms of the PFMA. This goes to the in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. The quarterly report in terms of regulation 5.3.1 developed in terms of the PFMA is this one, and this one, and this one. But the program of action quarterly reports are in terms of the requirement of the presidency in terms of managing how far we're going in terms of implementing the priorities of government. So the essence of what I'm saying is that you have a report in terms of the program of action. You have reports in terms of regulation 5.3.1, within which the quarterly report then is actually left out so as to deal with the annual report.
Chairperson, I do have four questions. Would you like me to place them now? Would it be better for the Secretary of Defense to complete his presentation? Yeah, okay, you also catch me in the middle of chewing a sweet. Just indulge me for a second.
Can I ask?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm seeing that we are yet to determine the program. Can I ask a question just about timeline that Mr. Fisher explained, and we can do our program according to that? Is that all right? Mr. Fisher, we've now seen that we will have three quarterly reports and then an annual report. And the chat plan, you made clear that we need this strict timeline. So by when do we have to have our recommendations in on the strat plan for it to still be useful for the department? So by when do we have to finish with the strat plan?
My recommendation would be that the strat plan must be
that the strat plan must be a closed session and before it must be tabled in Parliament. Because once we table it, you can't have actually any influence on that. been done before the time, you can probably give an input where you would make certain adjustments. So the one, you do it after the tabling, you're only going to take notice of it. If you do it before tabling, you can probably have an influence. Now, normally, in table, must be tabled in February, February of the year, but it also has, the tabling thereof is much, very much in line with the date that we determined for the budget speech. So normally it's in February, but sometimes that date is being adjusted according to what the time scale is for the budget speech. But normally, remember, we start working on that strategic business plan on the 1st of March every year. The 1st of April. 1st of April, that strategic business plan is actually going to lead into the work for the rest of the year. The annual report.
Just for clarity now, so when can we put on our program, if it's a closed session, because we have to confirm that it's actually allowed, if it's a closed session, but when, before the budget speech, we need a date because we need to establish a program, or a timeline. Jefferson, I then just ask about the quarterly report, because if we want to discuss quarterly report then, like for instance at the end of March, we need to know, will that be able to produce in the first week of April? Will they be able to come and present to us?
The level of the court report. The court report is not. I mean, the wish of the portfolio committee. They can request anything, and we have to report on it. But the strategic business plan and annual report is a statutory obligation. The court report was originally made as internal management document. Now, when you look at the court report, for the department to put a court report together, we can do it at best about 3 weeks after the end of that quarter. Then once you put it together, the document must go then to the Secretariat Council and Military Command Council, whereafter it is presented to the Defence Staff Council, whereafter it must be presented to the Minister. So therefore, in all practical terms, you will find that a quarterly report for us to bring it to the Portfolio Committee, because in terms of the principles that our Minister requested that she must be briefed before you come to the Portfolio Committee, it will be very difficult to have that court report here within 6 weeks after the court.
Thank you, Chair. I've managed to finish my suite. Let me. My first question is in relation to the structure. And I put this question to the Secretary. It would strike me in a system where the Constitution requires civilian supremacy. I'm quite interested in the fact that the Defence Secretariat and the South African National Defence Force are both level one entities. It would seem to me, what I don't understand is why the Defence Secretariat is not... My question is, why is the Defence Secretariat not, as it were, on top of the South African National Defence Force? And how does this structure compare to other structures in democracies around the world? So that's one question. The second question is about quarterly reports. I mean, will we receive those quarterly reports? If we don't, I think that we ought to receive those quarterly reports, even if they are 6 weeks after the due date within the department. The third question is, I mean, given the description by members of the delegation, it doesn't seem to me that this system lends itself, shall I put it delicately, to flexibility and to sort of rapid change of policy. I'd be quite interested if you could explain how it is you would deal with a new priority from government. I mean, the best example here would be military veterans are now a new priority. Borderline security may be a new priority of government. That would require the Secretariat and the Department to adjust the plan. And how does that adjustment or realignment or change take place within your system? The fourth question I again direct towards the Secretary. You mentioned that the Chief of Defense Intelligence departed. Then you said he retired. Why did he depart? Those are my questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've got about two questions. That is on the organizational organogram, the design itself. Actually, I just wanted to check as to where is the procurement and acquisition division falling under, because I don't see it here, actually. And also with the newly established military veterans, how is this, where do they fit in this new defense macro organizational design? And then lastly, Chair, on this PCD, Portfolio Committee of Defense, I wonder if that acronym actually could maybe be PCDMV. Yeah, thank you. That's the word for it. Thank you.
Okay, on the first question, yes, the structure and the offices of the Circles for Defense and of the Chamber of the National Defense Force perform separate and distinct functions, but are complementary. And the law makes clear that the Circles for Defense is the head of the department and the accounting officer, and the Chief of the National Defense Force is the commander of the National Defense Force. And it is that emphasis that often gets lost, even in speak, even people across government, sometimes even in the department itself, people say or think that there are two heads. There are no two heads. There are those separate and distinct roles. The commander of the defense force and the principal military advisor is the chief of the national defense force. And when the president issues an instruction for the employment of the defense force, it is the chief of the defense force who then does that employment. The defense policy with respect to that is then provided by the Circles for Defense. And also the process of the advice and authorization for such deployment is provided by the Circles for Defense. So those are two distinct roles. But the two also work, they complement each other in terms of the manner of working, understanding those specific roles that they both have. On the budget adjustment, when new priorities emerge, like with the establishment of the military veterans and so on, and additional functions. That happens, if you could show the other slides. That happens through the budget adjustment that take place. You know, yeah, that one. Once the budget speech has been promulgated and then we've presented our strategic business plan, if any changes then happen, if any changes to policy or additional functions, if they happen, that's about where we give the strategic business plan. If there are any changes that then happen in between, it is here that we then have an opportunity to table the policy priorities before the MTEC, that is the medium-term expenditure committee hearings. That is the point at which we then say these are the new policy priorities that we have. And then by the time the Minister of Finance issues the medium-term budget policy statement, it's taken into account what then got tabled at the medium-term expenditure committee here. And this is applicable across all of government. So when the period of the adoption of the medium-term strategic framework takes place, there's at the same time a call from National Treasury. There's a call for policy priorities or policy reprioritization. It is at that point that Department A or B or let's say ourselves, we then say, we have been given an additional responsibility, in this case military veterans, or even if we have not been given an additional responsibility, in terms of the budget baseline that we have, we will not be able to suffice. We would like to place forward a new requirement and so on. Then, as part of the total pot of government and departments who put in bids, National Treasury then considers all of the bids, and they actually put together the figure for all the bids and scrutinize each budget, each department's budget, and whether or of the, let's say, 10, just out of my head, just of the 10 priorities or reprioritizations of departments, which can they take or which can they be able to fund, looking at the broader scheme of the big pot, that is the government budget. Then that gets approved at the MTEC hearings and then for then final promulgation at the Minister of Finance's budget policy statement. So that's how it goes. With respect to these new functions, we have already tabled before the National Treasury Committee, which is preparing for the MTEC hearings as we speak, that we now have the responsibility to establish an entity for military veterans. And I call it entity because it may turn out to be a department which reports to the Minister of Defense. It may be a commission. It may be an agency. Whatever it will be, but a dedicated entity that deals with that. So we have already said that. But having said that, we have not put a figure to it because we at this point have not worked out on what should be. And that's in process. What should be the structure, the shape, and the size of that particular entity that will now deal with military veterans? Which then brings me to the question of, go back to the macro structure, the question of, in the organogram, where do the military veterans fall? You will not see it in this particular macro-organizational design, but there is an entity that exists as we speak. There's a small directorate within the Human Resources Division, which is actually the Directorate of Military Veterans Affairs. And that has been in existence for some time, which it took its mandate from the Military Veterans Affairs Act of 1999. So for us, that is going to be, that's the nucleus of a successor entity now that there is a Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans and the Department of Defense and Military Veterans. I should also use the opportunity now that we're talking about military veterans to indicate that the minister has set up a task team on military veterans so as to then look at the implementation of the decision to have a military veterans entity. And that task team is actually headed by the Deputy Minister of Defense and will be coming to appear before the committee in due course to just give a progress report. At the same time, as part of the national macro organization of the state, we are participating within that entity, which is led by the presidency and the Department of Public Service and Administration, to look at the changes across all of government, especially those affected entities. So we are participating in that so that we can also get advice, legal advice, advice from National Treasury, advice in terms of how we structure this entity and so on, and are engaging very closely. That entity, which they call the NMOS, National Macro Organization of the State, meets on a weekly basis and reports to cabinet at least monthly just to track what is progress. It is intended that by the time we have budget adjustments later in the year, it's very close. 2 months time, then there will be some determination in terms of the new entities. Others have been fortunate, it's just been a split of two, like minerals and energy. Minerals went that way, energy went that way. So those are existing fully fledged entities. Whereas with us, we're still starting. So we are hoping that come that period, we will actually have something that we can be able to put a figure to, because we've already put the policy priority and to that national macro organization of the state. The question on the Chief of Defense Intelligence, yes, he did leave the service and is no longer in service of the Department of Defense. So there is somebody who is acting in that position. And then the PCD and MV, we can change that, yeah. So that in the purview of the committee, whether you will go on to or transform to become Portfolio Committee and Military Veterans, or,
the question is very interesting. For the President of the Defense and Military Veterans, so your Portfolio Committee according to Parliament, Portfolio Committee of Defense and Military Veterans. So your word must change the situation to fit in with us.
Chair, just to follow up, I'm aware that the Defense Intelligence Chief left the service. My question was, why did he leave?
You know, you see the session today is more to create a program. But that question keeps to us. It's not here today. But the moment will arise when you have to get clarity on why he leaves. But today I have said, let's lay the basis for the program. And as you could see, you do have an outline there, which I expect that after all the presentation by the sector, we'll then come back and see, because we are supposed to be seeing each other on the 11th of August, but it has now been quite clear that do we go for the state of readiness, what does the department say? So you are going to go to come to that systematic arrangement. So now I just want you to have a broader sense so that when you plan this program, you all know exactly how the department is operating. And then maybe your why question would be answered in how we can our program join to the it is a relevant question, but let's keep it to us.
Comrade Jefferson. Yeah, I just found out, Comrade Jefferson, on 2008-2009 annual report. I'm sorry. 2009-2010 quarterly report. The 1, 2, 3, 4. But now I just found. No page here. I'm not sure. Once or one? Why if it's just once a year, why the others are quarter to support? Just find out that
the quarterly report on the program of action. No, we don't submit once a year. We do submit a quarterly report, but it's only that it follows a different route. The program of action, we do submit quarterly reports as well. We do give feedback to the president. And then at the end of the year, then we'll give an end of the year report to the president. Then as far as the strategic plan is concerned, then we give quarterly report, three quarterly report to Parliament or to PCD, and the last one, we don't do it, but instead we compile an annual report.
members, we just briefly captured the, but the study is going beyond the calendar year. Basically, the legislation or policy that will be introduced in Parliament, primarily the legislation, we have already submitted as an indication of the current year, what we'll be submitting. Even though you see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 there, not all of them will serve now during this period. Formally, what we have and what we are ready with and regard as most urgent, it's a Defense Amendment Bill as well as the Geneva Convention Bill. And those have been on the table of Parliament. We intend to then continue with that. The Military Discipline Bill, we are still working on, and we need to have more input and finalize that in-house. We had registered the intent earlier. And that's basically an amendment on the Military Discipline Supplementary Measures Bill. The Defense Amendment Bill and the Geneva Conventions are the prime ones that we'll then deal with. And then linked to the Defense Amendment Bill, the General Regulations, in terms of Section 82, and then the regulations to the National Conventional Arms Control Amendment Act. And then the Defense Strategy 2030, that is something that we intend to put before the PCDMV later in the year. We are still in the process of in-house consultation and finalizing that, receiving different inputs from within the department. So we may likely only get it to serve in the last section or the session towards the end of the year. Let me put it that way. Once we have cleared that with the minister and taken it through cabinet and so on. So that is briefly where we are with respect to that. Now, the outputs provided in terms of our mandate cover our defense commitments, which include ongoing operations for which we've made the financial plans and provision in advance. Oh, the question. Okay.
Sorry. You can continue. No, Chair. Morning to all of you. I think I thought we had just communicated, and I think I will raise my hand at the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just while we're covering the defense strategy, the Secretary mentioned that the defense strategy document would be presented to this committee towards the end of the year once it had been cleared with the minister and taken through cabinet. Now, what will the status of this document be? Will the committee be presented with an already agreed upon defense strategy signed off by the cabinet? Would it be presented just for our information, or do you anticipate quite substantial public participation in the development of that strategy?
Maybe I was a little bit out to solve another problem outside. If maybe somebody was to raise this question, then you'll help me answer. You know, I saw here religious service, you know, religious on page 30. Yeah, on religious services, you know, I'm not sure in the department they use different religions, because in the parliament I like it. When the parliament opens, you'll find a different group of religions. That is very important. I'm not sure in the sense for what they use the.
Oh, okay. You never get covered. You are very lucky. Just keep your eyes open. Yeah. I thought memory is more giving you the processes in Denmark. And at the end of the day, those processes, they have to come to Parliament as an institution. And Parliament itself then open up the discussion and debate around that issue of the strategy in 2030. And when we have finalized the dividend to the public, we can send it back to them. We send it back to the president if it's that's how I understood. Yeah. So it's not that we are being instructed from the president that it is our views. It's more in the process of making sure that each and everybody in the executive and the president have got covered in this issue. But when it comes to parliament, it gets tabled in front of us, and then we open up our own process of engagement, inputting, bringing our own ideas, and allowing the public to have a say over that particular document that is in front of us. I think it's going to go through the same process. It's not going to be different at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. No, we agree with the sector.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. Still as part of our defense commitment, operations that must be executed during the year and if at foreseeable for it.
Okay.
Before you go forward, that's why I need to give a sense of what does this National Convention Arms Control Amendment Act imply in relation to what you are talking about. Does it improve the act itself? What is it?
Okay.
Yes. And then in terms of the defense commitment, yes, the joint interdepartmental and multinational exercises that are required during the year to prepare forces for operation. And then also as part of our the defense output, landward defense capabilities, that's primarily the Army, and then also air defense capabilities executed primarily by the South African Air Force, and then maritime defense capabilities. As well as then furthermore as part of the output, military health, which is a support capability to deployed members as well as the dependents of all serving members and their dependents. And then defense diplomacy, which includes the deployment of defense attaches, servicing of defense-related memoranda of understanding, participation in the defense and security structures of the United Nations, the African Union, and the Southern African Development Community, SADC, and then also the provision of defense-related policy and ministerial advice, as well as providing cryptographic services, security services for government departments, and then housing the National Codification Bureau, and then the provision of appropriate framework for sound policy direction, advice, and systematic monitoring and evaluation, and then the provision of defense-related capabilities that respond to evolving policy and national priorities. Now, in terms of our programs, and these are captured in the strategic business plan, but just to briefly go over them, in terms of our programs, the outputs of the DoD are translated into vote number 19, and they are as follows: administration, and within that we'll then unpack it, but just to capture the big elements, at the program one, that is the administration, program two, landward defense, program three, air defense, program four, maritime defense, program five, military health support, program six, defense intelligence, program seven, general support, program eight, force employment. Now, to then unpack the detail of what is in each of those eight programs of vote 19, the administration program's purpose is to conduct policy development, management, and administration of the department.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their measurable objectives are providing sound defense direction and advice, and then providing defense-related social responsibilities, and then consensus on defense, developing that, and then sound policy and administration, and then a contingency-ready defense capability, and then a framework for systematic monitoring and evaluation, that is M&E. Now, if you were to then further break down in terms of structure, the administration program, what is entailed in the administration program? In the administration program, you have the sub-programs as indicated. Firstly, you have ministerial direction, which is captured, and that is on slide number 13 of the handout, which is captured by the offices of the minister and the deputy minister. Those are the responsible entities. And then the departmental direction, that is the responsibility of the Secretary for Defense as the head of the department and accounting officer. And then the command and control of the SANDF, that is the responsibility of the Chief of the South African National Defense Force. And then the policy and planning sub-program, the responsibility for that is the defense strategy, policy and planning, which is headed by Dr. Kamete, and then also the sub-program, military policy, strategy and planning in the Chief of Corporate Staff and Environment. And then financial services by the Chief Financial Officer. And then still going further, as part of the administration program, acquisition services, within that you have Chief Material, Mr. Fesser, Technology Development, and the Supply Chain, which is the Head of Supply Chain Integration. And then, and I think one of the members asked about procurement.
Yes.
Yes, the procurement. Yeah, procurement then is covered within that program. That is a sub-program acquisition services. So as you see, the responsibility, Chief Material Technology Development, and supply chain in particular, not supply chain entity.
We have also taken the Centre for Procurement Services, which resides directly to that mission, that has been decentralized. It is now under Chief Staff Logistics or under Chief Lock. So, because they are really responsible for the execution of the procurement. So, I just want to add that thing.
Inspection services, the responsibility for that is the Inspector General, as you saw on the organogram, and then also that internal audit function. That will move out in due course once we're done with the Chief Internal Audit. And then the South African National Defense Force Command and Control, it's the Chief of the SANDF, Office of the Chief of the SANDF, and then Human Resources Support Services, Chief of Human Resources, Legal Services, Chief of Defense and Legal Services is responsible for that. And then further programs, as part of the administration program, sub-programs, religious services, that is the responsibility of the Chaplain General. And then the communication services, the responsibility of the Head of Communication. And then the Defense Reserve Direction, that is the Chief of Defense Reserve. Defense Foreign Relations, that is the Defense Foreign Relations Subdivision, as well as Chief Defense International Affairs. Should have been the other way around. And then property management, Chief of Logistics. Do you want to come in?
I would just like to bring it to the members' attention that this program administration is prescribed by the National Treasury. So you'll find that all departments have this as program one on their budget. And the content thereof is also fairly prescribed by the National Treasury. However, the National Treasury has now also instituted a new initiative, and we're actually speaking to them next week to re-look at the composition of the programs in terms of the broader guidelines for all departments, and what the intention is to look at three, I would not say super programs, but three distinct groups of programs. The first one will of necessity be administration. The second one will be a category of, I'm just trying to look for the word now, enablement. And the last one will then be the actual execution, the service delivery. So all programs that relate to service delivery directly to the public will then be grouped into one so that when the National Treasury consolidates all departments' expenditures, they can actually see what the price or the cost of service delivery for the country will be, as well as in the supporting side and the administration side. So that all enhances the whole initiative to improve management information to also assist in better decision-making process. Thank you.
Yeah, we're done with the administration program. And the others are really self-explanatory, because then it's the landward and then the air defense and the maritime defense. Yeah. And the military incident. But it's this one which is compacted and has a lot of elements to it, as he has already explained.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm interested in knowing how this takes place. What is it for?
Religious services. The.
You know, when we are talking about Ali as a church leader, you can read the Bible and chapter 7, verse 7:1 is talking about Ali. According to the Bible, the army is an institution of God. The Bible is that I'm trying to assist in that blank. Judges 7. You can read 1:8-7. You look at the army is there. And the army, according to Bible, is the institution of God to protect you, human beings. That's why, as a religion people, we must talk always about that. Gentlemen, now my question is arrived. When I was asking about religious people, my question is that it was, let's say, in Parliament, Kobe Jefferson, you see, when the Parliament opened, different Jews and Muslims and so on, Christianity and all those things. And all people that enjoy to see the Parliament respect all the religions in South Africa. Now, my question is that in the defense also, because the defense is a big institution of God, there is a different religion also to hold the service on that. It's just my question. Thank you very much.
The honorable members, all religions in the National Defense Force are recognized in accordance with the Constitution. And in fact, you have what is called religious advisory boards, which means that there is one for the Christian faith, there is one for the Muslim faith, and so on you go. Those exist, and those boards serve to advise the Chaplain General, who then advises the department. Furthermore, there is actually a process to then also ensure that for those religions that then form part of the religious advisory board, they also assist and advise in the process of the appointment of chaplains in the National Defense Force. It's across all the religions, or if you go deeper down, the different denominational groups. So that is the way the structure is. In terms of why do we have the chaplain service in the armed forces? I suppose it's a moot question, but it's for the spiritual well-being of the serving members of the defense one. They are under no obligation to belong to any specific one. It is their choice whether to belong or observe religious services. But that is what currently presents. And they are also involved in operations as well.
Now that you have a sense of how the department is, we do have a proposal. I can see in the workshop and we can buy it for 1 week and finish by today. Just by sorting out everything, then tomorrow we can go back to the hospital. It's quite clear from my mind that with this couple of presentations and now getting to what we have directed, some of the questions that one can see on the program will be able to finish by today. And relate to our guests. I don't know. Thank you. And what is in front of us, there is a proposal that says what is it that we can do from next week, the 11th. There's been always a person that has been working on that there, a person that has taken the evidence, we think that the person has taken the evidence. We have promised during the Bible that we will come back to that. Now, it's in front of us, the Secretary of Defense here, we need to know now that our ladies are ready to go. We are going to go through this particular program with you to see if you are quite organized. I left us now because you are going to have us. The question of that will be confidential or not, that was resolved. We are going to go through that particular room. We have had a session in Parliament where we discussed that particular room. And in majority, we agree that this type of question was very involved in the same secrecy we have to maintain that Parliament. And that's why we're not going to have a little question. But here in front of you, and if a program proposed, I tell you that this is a short-term program that we are trying to organize for the period that we come back to Parliament. And then, as I said to members, now that you understand how the department is working, we'll be able to move to particular program because we have a one-year program and propose that. So this is what it is. I want you to, on the 11th, we need to be able to have a state of action. The department is in front of you. You can make a joint discussion on the country and I recommend that our department is open. But on that particular day, we needed to be on the 11th one, for the other task of that they are bringing them down. Usually, we just take a piece of waiting as a decision in one. And we are trying to bring them down so that we can deal with the army and we deal with the federal government. But also among other members, which is one element that goes with this, is about the joint standing committee on this time. I know for years we've been doing this thing together as a portfolio policy, but there is a concern that this policy arrangement or this type of question is supposed to be dealt with under the Joint Standing Committee of Defense. We reflect on it and we engage with the discussion of the Joint Standing Committee of Defense and see how we handle that. But as of now, we are presenting to you some of the suggestions or some of the things that have come that we put on the preliminary program of action of Parliament and see the readiness of this party. Now that it's going to continue after that, that there was a sit down and talk to you about the parliamentary program. And I thought that yesterday the basis of finding how we can work together. And at the end of the day, we can see members are going to raise questions. And whenever they come across information, it will change sometimes the parliamentary program depends. The demands that are there and have to be on. But this is a broader program that we want to see
there's an agreement, you know, that the pastoral and you work on it between them. You work on the discussion for your two pastoral is provided with this form. Can I argue you whether this is the pastoral statement? Go along with that. You need to go back to the center.
So you want me to speak to the program post the 5-6 now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm available. But you think you have only in the portfolio for the you want to come back to this question. And we have done that, for example, to speak to the father goes when you start engaging with the parliament on the condition that I'm saying. So this is one of the issues that have promised I agree.
Chair, we are not yet ready, but we can be before the end of the month of August, but we are not yet ready. We can, as we go through the program, we can take some of the other items that have been listed here, but these specific ones that were scheduled for the 11th and the 12th, we are not yet ready.
The private department is saying that it's not just ready for the 11th and 12th to bring the issue of paper readiness for the South African Army and the South African Airport. It's a very important question. And also saying that on the 12th we're supposed to bring the name and the names that I have present. They say they're not ready. But we would want us to consider the public African and the public election. What is the feeling of the government?
You are here. Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I yield the floor to my colleague. A question, Mr. Chair, which related to something slightly different in terms of the administrative arrangements of the SANDF. You referred a couple of times, Mr. Secretary, to the movement of the audit services from the Inspector General to the Defence Secretariat. Just a brief question on why that's happening.
So the inspection services traditionally in all the armed forces are an entity which is to provide the commander or commanders in the armed forces with that tool to be able to see that all the structures do what they're supposed to do in terms of the operations, in terms of the equipment, expenditure and so on. Over time, the entity of audit was then developed in the South African National Defence Force, which then, as members may know, auditing then becomes a matter that is after the fact. And it was then felt with the establishment of a secretariat that is a function that should actually result under the Secretary for Defense as part of that oversight on defense, on the defense force. So even if that existed, then that it should be moved away from the inspections. Let them inspect and continue to inspect, but the auditing entity to then resort under the Secretary for Defense. That was part of the motivation, so that the commander of the Defense Force has the inspection services and his or her tool to hold commanders responsible. From an accounting officer point of view, accounting officer needs to have the satisfaction that those resources that have been allocated to the chief of the National Defense Force are accounted for, they are auditable and so on. The internal audit function actually works closely with the Office of the Auditor General, and it is a function that also assists the accounting officer to the audit committee. of the Department of Defense. Now, the Audit Committee, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, is an independent entity which is chaired, and the membership of which is made up of external people, totally external to the department, save for literally a handful, about three people, who then sit on the Audit Committee from a department's point of view. It would be the Secretary for Defense, the Chief Financial Officer, the Inspector General, and the Chief of Corporate Staff to represent the interests of the Chief of the National Defense Force. But the running, management, and chairing of the Audit Committee is a totally external entity that is appointed in terms of the rules of Treasury by the Minister of Defense, and the members are also appointed by the Minister of Defense. The other additional members to the Audit Committee are the Office of the Auditor General, who then sit in as members of the Audit Committee. So in due course, we will come back to the committee to just indicate the developments with respect to that structure and that separation of the audit function of the Department of Defense. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
When I was there, I was a little bit out, if I'm out of order, help me please, on page 8, about participation in the defense and the security structure of the United Nations. Now, I just find out, Chairperson, ask a question. How many we have in black and white on United Nations, African Union, and SADC? Maybe as a new member on this committee, maybe some others they know, but I don't know if maybe can give us in the black and white to see how many we have outside. Thank you very much.
I'll give you the exact figure at lunch, but I can safely say just about 3,000 members of the South African National Defense Force are, as we speak, deployed in peace support operations. Within that, if you break down, the bulk of them are on United Nations peace support operation missions, mainly in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which is the MONUC mission, the UN mission in the Congo, and then the second big contingent as part of the UN mission is in the Sudan, primarily in Darfur, the United Nations mission in Darfur, UNAMID, that is the second big contingent, and both those are United Nations missions, and then you have another big contingent in Burundi, but that is not a United Nations mission, it's an African Union mission in Burundi, which will be coming to an end quite soon and scaled down. So those are the main breakdowns. Yeah. But we can give the information when we resume after lunch in terms of the breakdown for the figures. Yeah.
The importance of question that has been raised by Marion and the other colleagues of ours on the organogram is a very much important question. Because you see, the policy of government, this is a citizen of the staff. The accountability of the department lies in this particular area, so that we don't run any parallel department. It's important that the citizen of the site does that capacity. So over here, we've been engaging with this matter. It has created tension in the department. It has allowed sometimes when you get that the general doesn't want to accept a particular development that is taking place within the department. So as you are looking at it now, the Department of the Secretary of Defense is beginning to more and more get the capacity to have control on issues that are related to the people of defense and the Secretary of Defense. So that's why we have to, you know, that question still remains relevant. Why on one line? Because our own expectation that when you talk of the civilian oversight, that it comes to the ministry, the immediate after the ministry, it comes to the Secretary of Defense, and everybody accounts to the Secretary of Defense. It in an early part of the Republic or other of other grounds, that they seem to be equality, that they seem to be an equal life, that they are equal in the other. So you need to improve that process. I thought that we have probably done that much, but it is a policy issue. The Secretary of Defense is the one that can be the one that means the commander. We accept the operational side when the people defend and his own policy is defined. The organogram must come up. But it also says, it talks a lot about the military deterrence. It talks a lot about how we are handling that particular issue. My improvement very slowly is to how we internalize it, but to ask it does say that. Since you have been engaging in the same issue with them, you have done nothing in relation to the military attack. You need to reflect very strongly about that. See where you are placed within the department or in the organogram, it means things in the top of the office is there. It doesn't mean that you change the stage, the status. So if you say it's a director, it means that the director is just 5-7, the top 5-7. I don't think it's a fair arrangement. We need to really reflect and give us more sensible things that say that where are they going to be? They can't remain in the same spot and become part of even human resource and become part of the territory. I don't think that that's a command is of policy. We need to do something with the people of mind. So that we don't fight with that for some time over. But we need to be able to tell us exactly what we are going to do. I thought I would just comment on those two issues. But let's go back to the program, Honorable Member, and see if now that the department says that it doesn't, not based on 11 and 12, it's according to 11 and 12, yeah, six operations. And also on the 19th and 25th, 19th, yeah, we are still going to go on. Because it's a very vital question that we need to answer all of us. It's a question of saying that the defense committee is what. Although it's a question that I know it has been in the defense committee, it was raised a person when we were engaging to say that can we have a reflection on how ready is the state, I mean, the defense officer. So it's a very crucial question that is being asked. Because if you do your work, you need to be able to say that if the defense has for setting the capabilities as defined by the Constitution of protecting the citizenship of South Africa. Now that question is posed upon after the defense policy and the defense spending committee. Does the defense force have the capability of protecting the citizenship of South Africa or the mass?
No, I'm saying that this question is very relevant. That's why it has been brought into the program. It's very relevant because the Constitution commands upon us to be able, as the Portfolio Committee and the Joint Standing Committee, to be able to find answers and be able to tell the citizenship of South Africa that the Defence Force does have the capability of defending. So it's a constitutional obligation that is confronting us. So that's why I thought that let's put it onto the program so that you could be able to reflect on it. But the department says at this particular moment it is not ready to deal with this question on the 11 and 12 and the 19. So maybe we should find a way of how we will resolve this matter because there's a reflection on our whole program of action in Parliament. What is your opinion, Minister?
Thank you, Chair. You asked for comments on the program. My first comment is, once again, I think the most urgent thing on our committee's agenda should be a meeting with the NCACC. There really is a critical situation, and I think we should meet them as absolutely early as possible. I don't want to be in a situation that we find out on the 2nd of September that somebody somewhere has authorized millions of rounds to be exported to Zimbabwe or thousands of sniper rifles exported to Syria. I think we need to get to the bottom of this matter as urgently as possible, and I would recommend to the committee that we meet the NCACC as soon as possible. Tomorrow could not be earlier than that. That's the first thing. The second thing is on the readiness briefing. First, a comment on the scope. It seems to me that if you look at the scope of the briefing, Chair, there are some important components missing. The first being the state of readiness of defense intelligence. The second being the state of readiness of the defense reserves. And the third major component that seems to be missing is the state of readiness of the Joint Operations Division. Now, I don't know if that's subsumed into the briefings on the Army, Air Force, and Navy, but perhaps the Secretary could clarify that for us. But I think that the scope of the readiness briefing should be amended to include at least defense intelligence and particularly defense reserves. Then just one final point. I think we should get clarity from the Secretary as to why the Department of Defense are not yet prepared for the readiness.